This is Jaguars Reporters.
Jaguars Reporters Reporting.
Presented by Burger King. Join Jaguars.com senior writer John Osher and peer of the realm we call Game Day, Cole Pepper, as they break down the last Jaguars game and look ahead to the next time the Jaguars take the field.
Why would I listen to anybody else?
Jaguars Reporters is brought to you by Burger King, American Express, Baptist Health, Wells Fargo, Ticket Exchange, Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue, and by Everbank. Jaguars Reporters begins right now.
And we welcome you in, Jaguars Reporters, here on a Tuesday night. Cole Pepper, John Osher, following the Jaguars victory.
Yes.
It's only the second time we've been able to say that.
Jaguars, feels like a winning streak.
They're one in a row.
That's right.
Jaguars get the victory against the Tennessee Titans, and kind of a different kind of feel around town all of a sudden, and in the inbox and on the post-game show and some of those things. Amazing how things can change in a hurry, at least not saying the tide has turned, but maybe the water's not flowing quite as heavily.
Well, it is a different feel, and what you hope, and with new coaches a lot of times, there's often a long, dark stretch, and it doesn't always turn around the way it did, say in San Francisco last year for Harbaugh. So they've had their long, dark stretch. 1-9 was really dark, but they've played better the last 2 weeks, and that's what you hope that what you're seeing is the beginning of a solid stretch and a different trend.
All right, let's get things started. Joe Fortunato has those trio of inquiries he'd like to fire at us right now.
And now, three burning questions.
And that first query, did Chad Henne change the conversation for the Jaguars?
Yeah, no question. I mean, I thought it clearly changed the previous week, especially when Mike Mularkey said that he was starting regardless of Blaine Gabbert's health, and when 2 days later he said that Chad, if he played well, would have a chance to be permanent, whatever permanent means at the quarterback position. So I think by adding on to what he had done the week before, it clearly sets you in a mode where these last five games, you want to look at this and say, what can Chad Henne be? Because seven quarters, which is what he's played well, obviously does not, that's not enough of a statistical grouping to say, yes, he's going to be this. But over five, six, seven games, if he plays well, then you can change your thought on what's going on in the offseason.
Well, and again, I said last week I thought unless Chad Henne played great or terrible, somewhere in between there, that you'd be looking at a quarterback competition going into next year. Truth be told, it wasn't a full-on quarterback competition in training camp this year. There was the opportunity, but Blaine Gabbert was going to get the benefit of the doubt when it came down to it.
But even if there had been, Blaine outplayed Chad in training camp.
Absolutely.
I mean, there was really not, you didn't hear whispers around the building of, hey, this is close.
Right. In fact, some people thought that Jordan Palmer might have outplayed Henne. And mostly that's because of the late comebacks in the preseason games. That being said, the Jaguars are in a position now where you can start looking at the rest of the schedule and say, you know what? There's some what-ifs here. What if this happens? What if that? It's not playoffs, but it's a chance to look at how things have developed and say, all right, it got a late start. It took a little longer to get some traction with the offense and a new coaching staff and so forth, but you can certainly see some things pointing up. There's a lot to get improved, no doubt, but I do think there's a lot that you can take out of Henne's, not just the game and the victory, but the last two games that Henne's played.
All right, question two, guys. Where was the pass rush?
Well, part of it, I think, was game plan, that they wanted to keep Locker from escaping. Mularkey alluded to that yesterday during his press conference. But the pass rush is not good. And that's in this day and age in the NFL, you have to protect the passer, you have to rush the passer, and you have to have the passer. And then you have to defend the passes when they're in the air. And we've talked about the key positions in the NFL being left tackle, pass rush, cornerback, and quarterback. And right now the Jaguars just are not getting any kind of pass rush to speak of. I think, you know, they won the game, so you can't say that the scheme was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not going to be able to do that against every quarterback they're going to see here the rest of the way.
No, and Mike Mularkey said Monday that there was, you know, maybe more pressure than the sack total would indicate, that he was pleased with how they got after it sometimes. And there were plays where they pressured Locker and kind of forced him out of the pocket. But, you know, in the grand scheme of things, 11 games, the number of sacks they have is not enough. And there have been too many games where the amount of pressure is not enough, especially when you've had games where the secondary has been injured and not playing well. It, you know, in this game right now, the pass rush is more important than the secondary, and you've got to affect the quarterback a little more than this team's been doing.
Yeah, in fact, the pass rush can cover up for the secondary if you have a good enough pass rush.
I mean, it does, and in most cases, you would prefer to have a deep affecting pass rush as opposed to great cover guys.
Yeah, and I'm just looking at, do you have the numbers right off the top of your head on, was it 13 sacks? And
I believe that's correct. And if it's not, it's right around, I mean, 13's the number that I've been, I think it is.
Were you going to say that you've been using?
No, I mean, I haven't written that number this week, but yep. Yes. 13.
I'll go with 13 in 11 games.
All right, last question. Are Shorts and Blackman the new Jimmy and Keenan?
No. But they had, and I answer that quickly because that's been the big question this week. And maybe, you know, over time. But we can't sit here after two games of them both playing well at the same time and say that they are Jimmy Smith and Keenan McCardell, who are arguably, you know, one of the top 5-6 tandems ever, maybe. I mean, those guys were elite and were elite for a long time. So, but what you like is that even if they're not that, they are effective. They are both becoming guys that defenses have to pay attention to, and they're making plays at critical times. Justin Blackman, 5 catches, 62 yards, but big catches the other day. Cecil Shorts is on pace for 1,000 yards. He's got over 20 yards a reception. That's 1970s numbers. Most guys, you know, and that was back when you didn't throw every down, and now you drew the defense in and threw over them, so guys had astronomical yards per catch. Most good receivers now are 14, 16 in that range.
Yep.
He has an unbelievable knack right now of making the big play. For a couple of games, you thought, well, okay, it's neat, but can he keep doing it? And then he keeps doing it.
Let me make a comparison here, if I may. Two years ago, the Jaguars' safeties were terrible. They had awful safety play. It was obvious to anybody who would watch how bad the safety. They were missing tackles. They weren't in coverage. They, you know, giving up big chunks of yardage. And so the Jaguars went out and signed Dewan Landry and Dwight Lowry. And last year and this year,
better.
You haven't
much better.
You haven't suddenly worried about the safety position when those guys have been in there.
Right. They're not the problem.
So the wide receiver position had been pretty bad for the last several years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this year, it appears for the foreseeable future, you don't have to worry about that position, barring injuries, right? You've got your two guys. You'd love to get another one, you know, somebody else who would you know, be a slot guy or really develop as that other. But it looks like you got two young guys who can be that for a while, and you won't have to worry about it.
Well, what becomes interesting on that front is, you know, there's obviously issues with LaRon Robinson with the concussions, and we know in the NFL right now, when a guy has this many concussions, that it's hard to predict the future when that happens. But assuming LaRon can come back next year, and I'm actually stealing this from an emailer today who pointed this out, he played very well in the slot for Dallas last year. You know, can he come in and fit in with this and all of a sudden give you three pretty good wide receivers? Evidence suggests that even if Laurent is not a one, even if he's not a 1,400-yard receiver, which some people thought he would be, and I wasn't sure he was ever that, but if he can come in and contribute to this bunch on a level sort of like he did in Dallas, that's a pretty good trio.
Yeah, and I'm going to withhold comment about expectations with Robinson,
sure,
because 4 concussions in 4 months is
absolutely
a scary thing. And the guy who used to do this show with me several years ago wasn't as – he was more old school. But I think I think you're with me on this in a lot of ways, recognizing the damage long-term that the concussions can have and the brain issues you can have later in life. And if somebody says, listen, I've had 4 in 4 months,
right?
I don't want to risk my life anymore, I get it.
But it can go many ways. And around here, people are assuming, oh, multiple concussions, Clint Session isn't back, it means the guy's done. It means it's uncertain. It doesn't mean it's done. Every guy is different. There are plenty of cases of guys who have a run like this, get rest, come back, and they're fine. Yeah. So, you know, what we're saying is it's unknown. But
whoever that third guy is, whether it's Robinson, whether it's Kevin Elliott, whether it's somebody who's not on the roster right now for the future, my point is on this is that you no longer are concerned about the wide receiver position in the way that you were concerned about it last year, and in the way that you were concerned about the safety position a couple of years ago. And so you see those glaring issues. Mm-hmm. The Jaguars have been able to go out and fix those issues as they've come up. Joe? You have a third? Oh, that was the third burning question.
Third burning question.
How many burning questions?
Having trouble with numbers today on Jaguars Reporters.
I was told there'd be no math.
I'm trying to sleep here. Leave me alone.
Sorry. All right, we'll take time out. When we come back, we'll hear from the general manager, Gene Smith, something you maybe didn't know from Sunday's game. We'll also take your calls at 800-355-NFL1.
And now, four burning questions.
We'll bring in the count, and you can tweet to me at Cole Pepper or John Osher at John Osher, or both of us. You could be driving a brand-new Kia Optima by registering to win Cons Kia. Stop by Southside Kia or Kia of Orange Park for your chance to win. More Jaguars Reporters presented by Burger King. Muppets and all when we come back right here on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back. Jaguars Reporters presented by Burger King. Cole Pepper, John Osher here. Pick up your Denny's Playmaker card at participating Denny's locations. Learn how you can win a mega Jaguars fan experience at the December 23rd home game. No purchase is necessary. All right, let's hear from the general manager, Gene Smith, what you maybe don't know about the Jaguars' win on Sunday over the Titans.
Well, we had 8 explosive plays on offense, 20 yards or more, which you'd like to go in a game and get 5, because certainly that can impact winning. And one of the explosive plays was by Cecil Shorts. He had a 59-yard touchdown, and he's second in the NFL with a 20.8 average per catch, and obviously with 4 for a 26.3-yard average on Sunday, he made a difference.
I think we just got a nickname out there.
I think Gene just dropped learned something nickname. I didn't know.
C-Score for Cecil Shorts. I like it. I think it's a good nickname.
I do.
Especially if he keeps doing it. All right, so we'll hear from Gene a little bit later on again on his Scouts Eye Unsung Player of the Game. You can join the conversation, though, 800-355-NFL1, 355-6351. You can join us via Twitter as well or on Facebook.com/JacksonvilleJaguars.
And all of our questions, guys, brought to us by the good people at CopyFacts. First question, it's a good one. What happens when Blaine Gabbert gets better?
I mean, gets healthy?
Yes.
Or plays
better?
No,
healthy.
Okay.
Healthy.
All right, well, again, I think you're looking at what's going to happen in the offseason. Mm-hmm. He's on IR. He's done for the year. But I think a lot of that has to do with what Chad Henne does between now and the end of the year. If we've seen Chad Henne play the baseline, if everything he's doing from here on out is as good or better than he's done, I think that he'll basically go into camp as the starting quarterback.
Chad will. Yes.
Chad Henne will.
And it's only right. I mean, if he plays the way he's played in the last 2 games for 6 games, he's clearly played better than Blaine Gabbert has in the last 24 games, so it wouldn't be fair not to start him. And I think that goes back to a point that I mentioned last week, is that so long as Henne plays well, right now it's going to be difficult for Blaine to get the job back before next regular season, simply because there won't be a time to have a body of work in games that count. But that's not to say that he can't perform very, very well during all the times that he has to perform well, that he can't do his job, and be ready, because if we've seen anything in this league, it's that there's injuries, there's opportunity, there's rising and falling of performance. So in no way should that mean that, you know, I get emails a lot this week, Blaine's done in Jacksonville. And that's not what this is. It's a situation where Chad has come in and he's playing well, has a chance to keep playing well, And there's just so many scripts that get written, you know, written with the quarterback position that you just don't know.
I mean, Blaine Gabbert could get Wally Pipped in a hurry.
Sure.
I mean, it can happen. It could also happen that Henny plays fairly well the rest of the year.
Trent Green.
There's a great example, with Kurt Warner. Or it could be a situation where Henny does okay the rest of the way, and then again it's wide open. Or
right.
It could be a situation where Henny wins it and then goes in, but in the preseason, Gabbert suddenly looked at me.
Right.
Listen, it's...
There's an assumption out there right now that it's going to play out one way. But if you look at history with this position, it's so important, and it's such a league where injuries, development, circumstances come into play that you just don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, 800-355-NFL1. You can also get us here on Twitter. Sonny's got one here. Do you guys think the Jaguars should go after Jason Babin? He was released today by the Philadelphia Eagles, pass rusher. What do you think?
It wouldn't bother me if they did. He had 5.5 sacks this year. That's not as many as 18.5. It is.
Wait, hang on. Let me do the math.
Well, that's what he had last year.
I know.
But it is significantly more than any Jaguars player has. So,
If you watch the Carolina Philly game last night, there's not an effort issue. It looks like he's healthy. He's just,
typically that's not a move that the Jaguars have made, but in the last 3 or 4 years. But,
because pass rush is such right now.
I don't know that it's something they're going to do. It would not be a bad idea in terms of, they could use pass rush help. There's no question about it.
And the one question that you have to ask on that is, would Babin want to come here?
Sure.
Some of the comments that I've seen in the stories today, he'd like to land with somebody who's a contender.
Gee, you think?
Year. Yeah. And so now we'll see who offers,
right.
But that would be something. And I think Tom is a cell phone caller. Tom had a thought on Babin as well. Tom, you're up here on Jaguars Reporters.
All right. That's what I was thinking. We're talking about we need a pass rusher for sure on this team. And we know that he can do it. He's down from last year to this year, but he's still got more than our entire team, basically almost. So he's definitely be someone I would think we would want to go after to shore that up and get us a pass rusher because we don't have one.
I think the big question.
I've been a season ticket holder from day one, and we need somebody like that. And I think we're second in line on the waiver wire. Why wouldn't we want to do
it's
it?
It's not a waiver situation because he's a veteran,
right?
But he becomes a street free agent. But it's got to be more than just can he help you this year. If you're gonna go after him, you have to believe he's gonna be able to help you next year.
Well, it's also the big thing is something you mentioned, Cole. There's 5 games left to go in the season. If he has a choice, it would stand to reason that he would go to a contending team that needs pass rushing help because you would rather be playing in January than not. And that's not the old nobody wants to come to Jacksonville. I think he would rather go to a contender than he would rather go to Cleveland or Kansas City or this team is not going to the playoffs, so if he's looking at this as a one-year thing, which if you pick a guy up with 5 games to go, it's clearly a trial period, then it would stand to reason that he would choose to go somewhere else if it got to that point.
Yeah, and so just as a note, 18 sacks you mentioned last year, he had signed the year before that, the offseason before that, 5-year, $28 million deal last summer. After he went to his first Pro Bowl with Tennessee following 2010. So things are falling apart in Philadelphia, and they're falling apart in a hurry, and I think you're going to see a lot of changes coming there in Philadelphia. Tom, thanks for the call. 800-355-NFL1, 355-6351. Let's get John and Keystone in here on Jaguars Reporters. John, how you doing?
All right. I was talking to Joe, and I was asking him if he remembered when you were talking about the other person earlier that was on this show, used to do this show. He questioned Gene Smith about Henny,
mm-hmm.
and he made a comment about that what was his thought about it, and didn't he really want him? And it was the thing was is he actually wanted to pick him before Miami got him for the Jaguars.
Yes,
and it seems awful strange that he's here now, and now he's working out, isn't it?
Well, I don't think it's strange at all. I mean, if you like the guy coming out of college and and he becomes available and you've done your research on him and your homework on him, you still like him and you can bring him, I don't think that's strange at all.
Yeah, I had never talked to Gene about that, but oftentimes in free agency, that's often what happens, is that when a guy comes up after 3 or 4 years, you know, teams keep their homework on guys. Now, obviously, you know about a quarterback because he's high profile, but teams keep all their homework on guys. So, you know, usually a GM is going to go after a guy that he felt good about in the draft simply because, you know, you're human beings, so you often have a good feel for a person. But I know Gene, I mean, they were very excited when they got Henny this offseason because the thought was that he was more than just a backup, and that if this situation occurred, you know, they didn't sign him because they thought he was bad.
Right.
So, yeah. So I mean, and that's what, when everybody jumped the gun in preseason and training camp and wanted him cut, there was very little chance of that ever happening because they liked the whole body of work that they were bringing in, and they felt good about what he could possibly do in this situation.
I've got to review this and see if the waiver wire is a consideration here or if he's becomes a street free agent, because I'm kind of seeing two different stories on this. Let me follow up on that as we take time out. Try Sonny's Chicken and Ribs, only $10.99. You get a heaping helping of our barbecue chicken and sweet and smoky ribs, plus two of your favorite sidekicks and garlic bread or cornbread, all for only $10.99. Sonny's, the first name in barbecue. When we come back, we'll hear from head coach Mike Mularkey on his team giving up 7 sacks on Sunday. Reminder to get a great deal on a Ford F-150 during truck month at your local Southern Ford dealers. Back with more Jaguars reporters presented by Burger King right here on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back. Jaguars Reporters presented by Burger King. You need a truck that works for you even when you're not working. The 2012 Silverado is the most dependable, longest-lasting, full-size pickup truck that fits your lifestyle. See your Southern Chevy dealer today, proud sponsors of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Time for an injury update brought to you by Baptist Health. Depend on us for life. Maurice Jones-Drew, probably another week, maybe two. Mike Mularkey saying this week he wanted to get Maurice back at some point this year. And having Maurice back with the way that the passing game is starting to look could certainly, I think, get some folks excited.
Thanks, Joe. It would be intriguing, obviously, you know, and it would be interesting to see how they work that back in. Maurice has always flourished in a very run-dominated offense, but a lot of that is because there haven't been the tools to throw that well around. So now that's a little different. It would be interesting to see what he could do without 8 guys in the box. So, yeah, I'm anxious to see that in the last 2 or 3 games.
You think would he not see 8 guys in the box?
Right. Well, you can certainly throw people out of 8 guys in the box.
You can, and the way they've been throwing
yeah.
it.
Yeah. So, yes, I think eventually he would stop seeing those fronts because they're throwing the ball better.
Two guys went on IR today for the Jaguars. William Middleton, who's had concussions, or 8 concussion. Jalen Parmalee, mm-hmm. groin injury. Mike Mularkey said he really was impressed with his toughness, how he played through it.
Yeah, that's really too bad because he had played well, and he helped this team on Sunday. So it's too bad. He certainly gutted it out on Sunday.
So here are the moves the Jaguars made today. Signed 5th-year cornerback Antoine Molden, 4-year veteran receiver Quan Cosby. Added first-year running back Jordan Todman off Minnesota's practice squad. Todman, you might recall, was running back at Connecticut when they had that great run a couple of years ago. And also signed a rookie wide receiver Tony Clemens off Pittsburgh's practice squad. He was a 7th-round pick of the Steelers. So they've made those moves there.
Just to clarify, you did not say Anquan Boldin.
No, not Anquan Boldin. Antoine Molden. It's, yeah.
That's like a bad joke.
Yeah, yeah. They signed cornerback Antoine Molden, not Anquan Boldin. So we'll see how those guys add to things. Derek Cox with a hamstring, and Rasheen Matthews will also have to keep an eye on to see how they come through. That's your injury update brought to you by Baptist Health. More information on those coming up tomorrow, certainly. You guys will have that information tomorrow night on Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna Live at Latitude 30. All right, clarification. I'm surprised to find out that I've made 2 mistakes in the same show, and I feel shame. Babin is a waiver wire situation.
Right.
Getting
and the issue is the Jaguars could pick, you know, if you put a claim on him, there'd be a high chance of them getting him because they're
number 2 in the waiver wire process.
Right, they are 2nd in that. The issue is if you do it at that time, then you claim his contract, which is a very big contract. So usually with guys like this late in the season, they clear waivers, and then they negotiate some sort of deal moving forward that doesn't tie the team to that old contract.
Yeah.
So that's why you usually see that, you know, they usually clear waivers in this situation.
And so Babin, again, 5.5 sacks. He is 32 years of age at this point, so not a long-term guy, but if you think he can help you for a couple of years, help with the pass rush.
Right. You would think he's a guy who clears and then negotiates a couple-year deal with a team that needs pass rushing help for the playoffs.
All right. Speaking of pass rush, the Jaguars were victimized by the pass rush. Let's hear Mike Mularkey's comments last night on the Mike Mularkey Show here on Jaguars Radio. Here's what he was saying, talking about giving up 7 sacks.
I don't like our quarterback getting hit at right. any time, and I think there was a couple that we were not firm up front.
Okay.
We were not, and that's the line, that's the tight ends, that's the backs, okay, where we were not physically firm. We did not. We lost a one-on-one block somewhere. But there were other ones where we had free runners, and when I say free runners, unblocked defenders coming, that it was more us than it was their scheme of a breakdown. We have to address that, no question, because you know we're playing a pretty good front that can get after the quarterback as well, and we got to address it.
All right, so that's something the Jaguars will have to deal with. Mario Williams, we'll talk more about that, one of the storylines for this week up in Buffalo. 800-355-NFL1, 355-6351. Let's go to Greg on the west side. Greg, you're up here on Jaguars Reporters, presented by Burger King.
Hey, gentlemen, how y'all doing tonight?
Good, how are you?
Not too bad. I have this question, actually, to the O-man. I was curious about wanted to ask him and see if I can just get an answer. In the area of concussions, Leonard Robinson supposedly has had 4 concussions this season.
Mm-hmm.
I was curious, is there like a limit the NFL has put now on career, as far as NFL careers, as far as the maximum concussions you can incur in a career before you get disqualified from being able to play? And,
yeah,
you know,
not really. I mean, it's all so new what's going on with this in terms of the emphasis on this and the amount that people are concerned about it. It's really not a limit. It's still up to the individual player and doctors. But they do require each time you come back to clear what they call a baseline concussion test. And what they do there is, I don't know the details of it, but they test before the season when the brain is quote-unquote normal, and then that provides the baseline. And then whenever you sustain a concussion, you've got to get back to that baseline before you're allowed back on the field. And my guess is that while that's true now, going forward, all this is going to change a lot over the course of 2, 3, 4, 5 years as they readdress this, because it is such a hot-button issue and there's so little known on it right now compared to what I guess will be known in 4 or 5 years the more they work on this.
They had a quarterback about 15 years ago, played for the Rams. I think his name was Scott Mitchell, and he came in the league. And I remember he had a short career because within the span of like 2 years, he suffered mm-hmm. something in the neighborhood like 7 or 8 concussions, and it ended his career prematurely. So I was just curious. No, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I mean, there's really not a number that the league puts in because it's very dangerous for the league to say you can't do this because of X. But it becomes the player's issue where doctors tell them, look, this is too much.
And not all concussions are created equal.
Right.
Some are create more damage than others. Some are minor concussions, the whole thing.
Some people are more susceptible. So
right.
No, and I don't think they'll ever be that. Hey, you have had 5, so you're out, because there's such a right to work thing. I mean, it's the league's concern, I think, long term, is making sure that they have the proper mechanisms in place so that players can't come back and say, I didn't know. But I don't think you'll see the league saying, you have to get out because you've had X number.
Prevent the lawsuits, definitely.
Sure, yeah.
Hey, you guys have a great night, and see you all next week.
All right,
Thank
Greg,
you.
Thanks for the call. 800-355-NFL1, 355-6351 if you want to join the conversation. All right, we'll take time out here. We'll come back, hear from Gene Smith, who names his Scouts Eye Unsung Player of the Week. Also want to play a little what-if here with the Jaguars, and we'll take a look at this week's opponent, the Buffalo Bills, as well as some things that can happen this week in the National Football League. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 teams that can clinch playoff berths this week. Fans, nobody helps you get ready for game day better than Gates. snacks, food, drinks, and more. Stop by Gate today. Back with more Jaguars Reporters presented by Burger King right here on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back. Jaguars Reporters presented by Burger King. Cole Pepper, John Osher here. The Jaguars Rewards Program now better than ever. While the season ticket owners get all the premium benefits like Teal Deals and the Gate Gas Redemption Program, the program's now open to all Jaguars fans. Get great discounts, cash back, and register to win a trip to the Super Bowl. Visit Jaguars.com and click on the Jaguars Rewards logo to start earning your rewards today. General Manager Gene Smith naming the Scout's Eye Unsung Player of the Week from Sunday's game.
Jalen Parmalee. Jalen had a gutty performance. He had an injury in the game. He tried to play through it. He had 8 rushes for 5.6 yards, had a catch, and he blocked very well.
And now his season is done with the groin injury placed on the injured reserve list. By the way, that would, I'm going to say something that hasn't been made official, but we're going to see a lot more Rashad Jennings, I would think, on Sunday against Buffalo.
Yeah, and I think it's obvious he needs to play better. Yeah. I mean, he
ran harder against Tennessee.
Yes, he ran harder against Tennessee, and I think you need to see more of that.
All right, 800-355-NFL1, 355-6351. Let's go to Ryan in Cincinnati, who's up here on Jaguars Reporters. Ryan, how you doing?
Doing all right. How you guys doing?
Good. What's on your mind?
Well, I guess I was calling because I was trying to find out more about the whole Sendarek Marks, Jared Allen, you know, kind of repetitive situation that we've got going on here in Jacksonville where, you know, it's nothing but unabated, you know, shots at our quarterbacks that, you know, aren't even getting flags. I heard last night on Malarkey's show, you know, Brian had asked him about it, and, you know, he basically said at the end of the year, the competition committee has to meet and decide how to go forward that situation. But, I mean, how are fans not supposed to feel, or I guess Jaguars fans not supposed to feel like we're the, you know, the redheaded stepchildren of the league if, you know, we're supposed to just wait praying that our quarterbacks don't die every week? I mean, because as of this point, it's just ridiculous.
I agree. I think it's been – I don't think it's necessarily a coordinated effort, but I think it's ridiculous that you get quarterbacks hit on unabated and the referees, you know, haven't done something about it in those situations.
Yeah, it's a you know, it's almost like it's a little quirky hole in the rule, and it's ridiculous. And you know, I think the fact that Mike was willing to say as much as he was on Monday about, you know, addressing it seriously with the league at the end of the year, which is really the time to get a philosophy changed, or that's the time when the league can kind of go to the referees and say, look, this is a point of emphasis. And as I say that, it sounds absurd that it's not a point of emphasis because
you're doing everything else to protect the quarterback.
Right, and for that not to have been called on several occasions this year, and I never have quite understood why it's not, even if it's not a rule per se.
Why is it not intentional, unnecessary?
It's unsportsmanlike conduct.
It's unnecessary.
You know,
listen,
it's clearly unnecessary.
In some situations, you see a defensive lineman jump in there, and particularly a defensive tackle who splits you know, the gap between the guard and the center, and before anything can happen, he's grabbing the quarterback.
Yeah,
I understand
yes,
that. But if the guy's all the way in there and he's grabbing the quarterback and throwing him down, and nobody's moving.
Right. I mean, and the argument that I hear people saying right now, and I agree with it, is, you know, they've put all in all these other rules that make guys look like they're forcing people to pull back from hitting them during a live play. Then there should be a rule in that forces them to pull back when it's unabated. And, yeah, everybody's going to complain, well, I didn't know, I couldn't quite tell. But if you've got it in every other phase, then you got to put it in on that.
Yeah,
on that play.
I agree with you, Ryan. I don't know what to tell you. I don't think it's a conspiracy theory, but it sure has. But I'll tell you this: if it was Peyton Manning back there, or Tom
exactly.
Brady, sure. Or Aaron Rodgers, or
exactly.
You know,
well, I mean, even look at Andrew Luck. I mean, Terrence Knighton and that Thursday night game. I mean, say what you will, but that you watch it and it literally looks like it was just a cause of physics. It looked like it was a fluky thing where his hand hit his helmet.
It was, but that's still the rule.
But that's always going to get called.
Yeah. They've taken away, a couple years ago, they took away the opportunity for officials to use judgment based on a guy getting hit in the head. If either he got hit in the head or he didn't, it's one or the other.
Right.
And he did. I mean, again, it's a
right.
It's not an egregious act. It just happens to be a 15-yard penalty that's associated right. with it.
I mean, would you guys? You guys obviously are much more familiar than the rest of us fans are. But I mean, I know after the Packers Seahawks debacle, you know, the NFL received like you know tons of voicemails and blah blah blah. And there was speculation that, you know, kind of an outpouring of fan outrage. I don't know that it pushed the needle or anything like that, but it definitely gave some influence. And I know as corny as it sounds, but would it do anything as a you know fan to just write a scathing letter or call the commissioner's office and leave voicemails just, you know, bloodletting the entire situation? Because I mean, as of this point, what you guys were saying
might make you feel better. I don't think it's going to do anything. The difference is that the other situation was with replacement refs, and there was a negotiation going on with the referees union. So that
and it was on national TV against a very popular team.
Yeah, and so, exactly.
That you know that didn't hurt getting that pushed through.
All right, thanks for the call, Ryan. We appreciate it. Want to spend just a second here on the Bills. This is a team that started off 3-3 and looked like they might be one of those surprise teams this year, but they've really fallen off since in terms of wins and losses. They're just 1-4 since then. But C.J. Spiller's having a huge year. He's averaging 6.7 yards a carry.
That's nuts.
That's Jim Brown and Barry Sanders averaged 5 yards a carry for their careers, and those are the two big numbers.
And it's a legitimate 6 yards a carry. I mean, it's not like he's run 15 times.
Right. No, he's their leading rusher,
yards.
And so he's getting it done. Mario Williams was the big offseason move. He has 8.5 sacks this year after a little bit of a slow start. But I will point out that you see the sacks, where they're coming. He had 3 sacks against Luck, 1 of Tannehill, 1.5 of Brandon Whedon in Cincinnati, and 2 on Kevin Cobb. So if you want to put Cobb in that category of being an inexperienced mm-hmm. quarterback, almost all of his sacks, are all but one, are coming against inexperienced quarterback. He had 1 of Schaub. Who you certainly wouldn't categorize as inexperienced. So kind of an interesting – I don't know what it means exactly, but it does show up.
To play the other side, I think most Jaguars fans would have loved 3 sacks on Luck.
Yeah, that's true. He gets rid of the ball
and moves around very well. But Mario Williams, to get 3 sacks on Luck right now takes some doing because he has really good pocket presence.
And so those are where his sacks are. Remember, he was the big-time free agent in the offseason.
And started very slow, so he's coming around.
And everybody wanted the Jaguars to go after him. The Jaguars just never had a chance, I don't think. He went to Buffalo, and the market was set, and that was it.
I think they locked him in a mall.
They might have. They threw a bunch of chicken wings at him. He's only human, what can you say? Real quickly, Texans, Ravens, Patriots, Broncos, Falcons can all clinch playoff berths this week, so we'll keep you updated on that during the broadcast on Sunday. Coming up tomorrow night, John Osher will be live and in person, along with Tony Boselli, Jeff Loggeman, Brian Sexton. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, is live at Latitude 30, 6 until 8 tomorrow night. Come on by and say hi. Food's excellent there. Joe Fortunato gives it the thumbs up. He just gave it the thumbs up. For John Osher, for Joe Fortunato, Cole Pepper saying thanks for listening to Jaguars Reporters, presented by Burger King, and good night from Jaguar Central.